And now,
from the didgeridoo to 140 miles east of Kalamazoo, at least as far as Google Maps says, this version is a tribute to Motown.
Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
From high atop Forrest J. Ackerman Square in the historic Los Feliz Village neighborhood of Los Angeles, California, this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And I'm Phil Lairness, and I'm speaking with the Motor City Madman, formerly Mujahideen, Dean Haglund. How are you, Dean?
Hey, it was fantastic. That was an excellent opening. So you're the Jay Ackerman, then, technically, is the architect of the building you're in?
No, oh, my goodness. Oh, and science fiction fans, yeah. SMHing all over the interweb, because sci-fi icon Dean Haglund does not know Forrest J. Ackerman.
Forrest J. Ackerman.
That's disappointing. So it turns out that there's these squares all over the city.
Yes, they are.
And it's basically just every intersection. And
Because we got, all the time.
That's the one we're overlooking. So...
So you live in Forrest J. Ackerman Square,
I live high atop, overlooking Forrest J. Ackerman Square, don't you know?
In Los Feliz.
Hence why I thought it was a lovely callback to an opening we used to do regularly on
this
self-same podcast.
Oh, the memories of 13 years of doing this.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
No, my gosh.
I'm feeling every one of them this morning.
How's the eyes? Let's start there. Everybody's worried. Everybody I talk to, hey, they say, Phil, is he really going blind? How's them eyes? What's going on? They say, is it true? They say they think you're joshing. They think you're pulling a fast one somehow.
As slowly as possible. I'm pulling a fast one. It's the slow con.
The long game, as we say in the con biz.
My vision sucks. So there you go. Yeah. I was up late because I can get stuff done now. If I'm working on a screen where the colors have been inverted so that text appears white on black background.
Yes.
Then I can use that. Now, this was a document that involved also inserting photos, which then, of course, proves problematic because you invert the photos or the color on a photo.
It's a negative.
It's a negative. Yeah,
that's right.
But I like to think that still doing it this way was a net positive. But
see what you did.
And then the other thing is I can't have ambient light around. So it needs to be night. I need to be in a darkened hallway. And then, so I was sitting on the stoop out on in the hallway, in the dark doing it and was able to get, good stuff done, but it,
wow,
you know, but we're heading into the longer days, Dean, not the longer nights. So, there's less and less of ideal circumstances on which I can count.
I guess a flight to Australia is in your future because the days are getting shorter down there.
Oh, well, that's the perfect solution to my eye problem. Not the surgeries, the trip down under.
That's all. 17 hours and your problems are solved, my friend.
All right. That's quite an advertisement. That's like Qantas Airlines should be using that as their tagline.
Got cataracts? Yeah, they're hilarious.
There's a photo. We were going to talk about this later, but we may as well just jump into this. It's the return of the live event of the week.
Yay!
The Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
So Lily Holloman, you remember her.
You married her, I think.
Before she was Lily Larinus. Yeah, but fans over the all around the globe will still get to enjoy her work as Lily Holloman. And indeed,
fantastic.
Movie fans can enjoy her work as Lily Holloman in Funny Story, independent film released theatrically this past week. But that's not a live event. In any way, shape, or form. But she is appearing in an immersive theater piece, which is really kind of up our alley in that it's an immersive drinking experience.
What? Hey.
It's the Mad Hatter. Now, the original title was better, but it's produced by event planners, not by theater people. So they think that it's all right after already selling thousands of tickets to then change the title, but it's the Mad Hatter's Gin and Tea Party at an undisclosed location in Hollywood, immersive experience in Wonderland, and Lily Holloman plays the Cheshire Cat. It may be Lily Holloman as Christopher Walken as the Cheshire Cat, and she's the Dormouse. And terrific. She's terrific. And apparently does her own stunts because in the final invited dress, the step, bottom step on the way up to the stage platform gave out.
Ouch.
Yeah. Oh,
collapsed.
Man. She smacked her back in a really unfortunate place, on the corner of the stage, going down hard. Yeah.
Oh, no.
So it was awful, especially because I could hear it more than see it, which is really my experience of the immersive theater experience itself. Was that, it's so colorful, and I can, apropos of how my eyesight is, I can appreciate colors. They're still vibrant, and I can see them. And if it's dark, like that environment is, then the colors really pop, or in a movie or something like that. But it's very tough in a room, especially full of people and an immersive theater piece. I'm constantly behind in trying to read the visual cues. My visual acuity is behind the pale. And so I'm slow on the pickup. But anyway, the reason I bring all this up is because there's a photo that Tucker, who was there, took, a selfie of he and I. It's available on my Instagram and my Facebook. But it's so colorful, and we're wearing, fantastic Mad Hatter hat creations. Everyone in the audience is assigned a different character based on their hat. But I look so glum in this photo. I look so glum. And when you see it and you realize that's me on a good night because I'm out and about...
You're just
God.
A glummy Gus?
Yeah, this is really wearing on me. This is really wearing.
Let me have a look at that. Oh, yeah, look at that. Well, that's pretty glum, all right. The Mad Hatter Gin and Tea Party.
So, originally the title of this, which I think was better, was Mad Hatter G and T Party. So letter G and T-E-A party.
Right. So you think that some fantastic gin and tonics are in order.
Exactly. Anyway, and, so very funny, though. The cast that Lily is with, very gifted, hilarious. It's a must for Wonderland fans, for Alice fans. And, you know, it's so funny because the writer of this piece seemed to have been shocked that there are people who are so into Lewis Carroll's creation.
Really?
But
he thought it was just an open source.
She did, but it was a big deal. It's a really, really big deal.
Wow. How about that?
So people can go to Hollywood and have this immersive theater experience and get their drink on.
Look at that.
90,
that's my kind of theater.
90 minutes and you come out toasted.
Liquored up.
Yeah.
Drive an Uber. Get an Uber to the theater. That's all I'm saying.
That's what... actually, that night, Erin Petrulis had volunteered to give me a lift, and so she came by, and we waited for a lift.
Hey, can I give you a lift?
Exactly.
Oh, I get it. Oh,
yeah, I got it once I was downstairs being forced to cross rush hour Vermont Avenue traffic while not being able to see. She's leading me by the arm. I go, where are we going? We're going to go pick up the lift. What? Where? I thought they pick us up. He's around a corner and up a block. And it was like we had to go to his house.
Hey, that's a service. Look, it's lazy Uber. Look, I'll give you a ride. You just got to come over.
I guess that's L in Lyft. Yeah, lazy Uber.
I got a new app. Yeah,
Lazy
Uber.
Okay, so we spent longer talking about my eyes than I had wanted to, but at least we got to the live event of the week.
There we go.
How's Lilu? We heard Lilu. Lilu made an appearance.
She barked.
Maybe growled. There was a neighbor child, and that child is devoured.
No. She's working on the bone of a cattle and enjoying herself, and it rolled under the chair. That was all.
And the chair is no more.
The chair's no more. We are at 14 weeks, 14 weeks old in our 15th week of being on the planet. Lilu has now grown to 33 pounds. So we're halfway to our 65 to 75 estimate of how big this blue Doberman is going to get. Check out her Instagram. Lilu Dobie, what is it? Dobie Lilu? I forget even.
Wow, this is really...
But get this, who drove 8 hours to Washington, D.C. like a champ with nary a complaint or an accident in the back seat of our car? It's a puppy Doberman. That's what happened.
Well, the amazing thing is that she was able to drive from the back seat.
I know. We were just giving commands. Left, right, straight ahead.
Now, if she ends up over the 75-pound weight limit, do you keep her?
No, we got to get two licenses at that point. One for the front and one for the back. No.
A special driver's license, too, to handle the wide load.
Exactly. Right. No, she is svelte and in tip-top condition.
All right. And why was she needed so desperately in the nation's capital?
Well, it was rolling thunder, wasn't it? And so, of course, I was going to go see Tintoretto at the National Gallery, and I was blocked on the 66 highway for an hour and a half while a spontaneous roadblock of some 200 bikers, many of them veterans, complaining about this being the last year of rolling thunder when some 100,000 bike enthusiasts show up in our nation's capital and roam around for no reason. And so they were upset. So they decided to stop me from going to the National Gallery, which I then said, you win. And I turned around and went back and just sat with Lilu watching Strangers on a Train by Alfred Hitchcock. So that was my entire Memorial Day weekend.
Where did you watch that?
Back at Patty's brother's house.
Oh, okay. All right. I see.
Near Alexandria, in Gainesville kind of thing.
All right. You just like made it seem like you just went back to the car. Mobile device, you and...
Wow. You know what? Yeah, it might as well have been. No, there was a house there the big backyard. She ran around.
Oh, she ran around. Okay, she was not cooped up. All right. This was really starting to sound like a case for the SPCA.
I don't know. No. A great time was had by all. Happy Memorial Weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me Memorial Weekend is it's one that's problematic for going out for the big drive.
Yeah.
Two years ago, we came to see you, connect with you in Dallas at Monsters Con. Right. And we drove in from just a southern part of the state of Texas on Memorial Day Getaway Friday. And remember how long it took for us to get in there? Because,
yes.
I mean, we thought, how long can it be? Right. But boy, God, those Texans, they hit the road.
And, they do.
And but, of course, any excuse to spend a couple hours in a Buc-ee's, which Lilu still gets to look forward to. So many things that Lilu gets to look forward to in her young life. Life, so many things, so many sights and sounds and smells that she gets to take in, 90% of them contained within a Buc-ee's. So,
yeah.
We're looking forward to that. Hey,
that's good.
Dean Haglund, if what I hear is true, speaking of turning your back on an art exhibit, what's the latest on the graphic novel?
Well, I am very close to having all the figure and background work done and almost ready for coloring. I've been delayed, of course, by a few
rolling thunder.
Exactly. That's been a couple of things, but we are close. I don't know if X-Fest will be there, but I'm thinking Christmas, this thing will be done. How exciting is that?
I don't know if after so long it's exciting, but a relief.
Well, look,
a relief. I mean,
yes.
Because I like you said, it's been beset by a couple of setbacks. I like that. Yes. Because if it weren't for these couple of setbacks recently, it would have come out right on time. Dovetail this. You mentioned X-Fest, and we're gonna keep our fingers crossed for a Christmas miracle. And then, of course, at some point as we approach Christmas, it's gonna look like you're not gonna get it done. It's gonna look like, oh no, Christmas is ruined again. But wait,
okay. So what do you say?
But you mentioned X-Fest.
Yeah.
So that is a convention.
Yes.
I think the only one. Only one that's completely dedicated to the X-Files. You and Tom and Bruce are spending, I think, as I understand it, a full day there playing games, providing audio commentary to episodes, signing autographs, posing for pictures.
All of this is news to me, too.
No.
I didn't know we're doing audio commentary, but...
I think I saw that somewhere on the web, which means it must be true. Some conventions, et cetera. Do we trust them as a source?
We do. Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
They're in my employee, actually. So.
Exactly. So
that would be, yeah.
But this is coming up in June. I mean, this is first weekend of June, right? It's.
But technically, June 1st is first weekend. So June 7th, maybe, is second.
You're absolutely right. So it's at the end of the first full week of June.
That's right.
Right. So it's 7th, 8th, 9th in Schaumburg, Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Get your tickets.
X-Fest. Very exciting. But you have... at least one other that I know of, convention appearance already on the book, maybe more. Can you preview those?
Yes. We're talking August 16th, 17th, 18th, or maybe that 17th August weekend in there. I'll be in Knoxville, Tennessee. Come on for the Alien Expo, speakers of UFOlogy and all sorts. Will be there with me.
Yeah, UFOs, also paranormal. I think there's
paranormal,
many
paranormal stuff.
Yeah, and absolutely. I believe you were really miscategorizing it if you even say the emphasis is entirely on that. I think it's well represented. But I noticed that Andrew Guff, who I mentioned a few weeks ago on this show about the interview that I did with him for Truth Is Out There too. He's going to be there, and I can't wait to have the opportunity to see him again, because, of course, I'm going to be coming out, and I'm going to be hanging out with you in Knoxville, because Knoxville is a super, super fun town. And
having never been, I'm going to take your word for it.
Yeah.
And
Mike Stewart, like you, one of my groomsmen, at my wedding, because that's where you meet him. And, you know, we were comparing notes at the New York engagement party, because I know he spent his 50th birthday in and around Knoxville. And, oh, my God, the, you know, the scenic terrain around Knoxville, almost beauty beyond belief. And he said to me, when I asked him about it, he said, Knoxville may not be my favorite place on earth, but it's definitely top two.
No,
so it's really cool.
Deal.
So we'll it'll be fun to compare notes on that. And do you have any other? I feel like there's one other that you've already booked a convention.
I feel there is two, but I think I don't know that one. I think it's in the future.
Okay.
By some time. And so I don't
You're the world's worst psychic. I think it's in the future. I see it in the future.
There's something in the future. Well, no, listen. My day is packed with what I call Doberman's wrangling. Baby Doberman wrangling.
Ladies and gentlemen, we gotta get that new jingle called Throwing Lulu Under the Bus.
I hardly throw her under the bus. I'm just giving, you know, excuses.
People,
I'm using hers.
Exactly. And I run into people all the time, and they're worried. They want to know, is Lulu real? Does Dean really have a Doberman? Is he just pulling a slow con on this?
Oh.
Is it just an excuse?
I see. Much like your eyesight.
Yeah, that was a callback. That's
it.
That's the thing, is that usually you have to have lost your eyesight as much as I have to have the keen hearing to pick up on a callback that subtle. But you were able to do it because of your years of training in stagecraft. Okay.
Oh, my God. This has become a vicious attack on me all of a sudden. I don't know how I don't know.
You are the ball underneath the leather chair. Okay, or the bone under the leather chair. All right. So one more question about the world of Dean Haglund, and then we'll move into some show business stuff.
No, but, I'm happy. I'm all about show business stuff.
I'm curious. Please. You had something you wanted to volunteer?
No, in fact, I'm going to say we got a new show that I've been working on. Live streaming sci-fi comedy.
Okay. Well, let's hear about this. No, I don't.
This is me and Scott Barrett, who I often go to for my editing work. We've been talking, we've been working, and now from me in Detroit and him in Los Angeles, we have managed to do a green screen sci-fi comedy of two guys stuck in a spaceship over Earth forever. They're jammed there forever. They don't know how to get out. And it's called Gravity Hole. Check it out at Gravity Hole.
What I love is you've taken your least favorite parts of Truth Is Out There, the parts where you're just stuck in the car talking to me on camera,
totally,
and turned it into a comedy series, really.
It's an inane comedy series. It's a comment on our culture, how inane everything has become. I realize that that is very much the essence of what everybody wants to see. And so we have made the most inane sci-fi comedy possible.
When can people see this?
We have our first episode up. And every episode is the same thing. We accidentally set off a self-destruct sequence. We got 20 minutes. And so the show is 20 minutes long and we blow up.
Spoiler.
Spoiler. Every episode. Spoiler alert.
The name of the show is Spoiler Alert.
no, we try to figure it out, but we never do. And so you can see it at gravityhole.com, or we're going to do an extended version on Twitch if you are in the Twitch network, in the gaming Twitch universe. You will be able to watch us. We're thinking Tuesdays and Sundays are looking good for us as a live show, which will be, what, 11 p.m. Eastern time.
So this is live. This is streaming live.
It's going to be streaming live, but then we record it, and then we put it up on the websites and on the YouTubes, and it'll just permeate through the ether sphere wherever sci-fi comedy is needed.
And how scripted is this?
Very little scripted. We have just a few beats, maybe some ideas. We have a historic record that we go to. But basically, we're two idiots in space. The show.
What is this week's historic record? I pray that it's maybe the Mills Brothers or...
No, it's a guy getting a large tire right into his right into the nether region.
All right,
we watch that and comment on that. So,
oh,
you know,
I see. Okay,
it's a lot of name video,
a cat,
name.
Or what is it? A monkey washing a cat. All right,
exactly. Oh, there we hear Lilu,
which is
shark.
Or we hear a monkey washing a cat.
Exactly,
but Lilu's providing. Lilu is your dog after all, and Lilu's providing the live sound effects.
That's what it sounds like.
So the fact that you're doing live streaming comedy, I don't want to take as an answer, but it sure seems to lend itself to an answer of how are you doing finding comedy venues in Detroit Motor City?
Oh, fantastic. I'm having lunch tomorrow with the head of Go Theater, the big improv thing in the town, and we're going to start planning our strategy now that it's summer. And the house seems to be holding up more or less, so I don't have to be here every day shoving something in some crack somewhere to keep this.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Hey, listen, we're talking house repairs.
You
I'm
know,
talking insulation.
Even blind, I get visual images, I get mental images. If you hear me eating what seems like it might be a bowl of steel cut oats with a sliced banana in the background, it's just Lilu doing stuff.
Oh, hilarious. So anyway, yes, the comedy, the live comedy scene will be happening shortly, but I'll have all those details next week.
Oh, okay. Well, we have that to look forward to. All right, Dean Haglund, turning our attention to the world of show business, the business of show. You know, this was Memorial Day weekend, and that was traditionally for so long the opening of the summer movie season. I guess metaphorically, it was the beginning of the summer season in America, right? With people having barbecues and rolling thunder trips.
Yes.
But so Hollywood would time its blockbusters to open often the Wednesday before Memorial Day weekend. Well,
right.
Now
that's gone.
Yeah, now it's end of April. Last Friday of April is the beginning of the summer movie season. But still,
right.
There is something that feels summerish about it, though not the weather in L.A. and where it's been cold and rainy. Rain on Memorial Day weekend is not that uncommon in Los Angeles. Many a year I have walked around the Memorial Day weekend to the Vista Theater, where Lily and I were married, to mm-hmm. see whatever movie had opened there, and I would do
right.
so in the rain. But because of the time of year it was, it would always be warm and muggy, so it's one of those things where after 15 seconds inside the theater, you're dry.
Right.
But it is cold. It's been cold and rainy, and having grown up near there, I can tell you, the closest approximation I can give you is it's like San Francisco.
Oh, yipesties, that's cold.
Yeah, we will get out of the 60s and into the 70s by this coming weekend.
Oh my God,
sunny,
you're having Michigan weather.
Sunny and 60 degrees the final week of May, Los Angeles. So let that
wow.
sink in for a minute. But... so the times change, I guess, is my message, kids. But the summer movie season, the traditional Memorial Day weekend, certainly seems like a time for us to roll up our sleeves and delve into some blockbusters, talk about the movie business and cinema around the world, because it also coincides with the conclusion of the prestigious Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, yes. Of course.
And this year's Cannes Film Festival generated a lot of headlines. Quentin Tarantino's ninth film, if you consider Kill Bill as only one movie.
Right.
His ninth or tenth film, but he advertises it as his ninth, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, had its world premiere there.
I heard a seven-minute standing ovation.
We have no idea how long the standing ovation was, but the part you could hear was 7 minutes long. Yes, has opened to great reviews, played to great reviews there at Cannes. And reviews were published despite Tarantino's plea that no one spoil the third act of the film.
Oh.
And the reviews, which are all quite positive, especially effusive about the first two acts that were on the table to discuss.
Oh, yeah.
If they had a nitpick, it was spoil the third act. It's the third act that spoils the film.
Oh.
But those first two acts are supposed to be just extraordinary, and indeed it looks good. So that was great fun. But the other big news, not probably generating as much news, sadly, here as Tarantino's movie, but was the winner of the top prize, the Palme d'Or,
yes,
which went for the first time ever to a Korean film.
Ooh.
A dark comedy called Parasite.
Oh.
From director Bong Joon-ho, whose work we have really been championing on this podcast since its inception.
Right
around the time we started was when I caught The Host for the first time.
The Host we loved. Yes.
His film Mother, so good, winner of the LA Film Critics Circle for Best Actress, Snowpiercer, made my top 10 list, and Okja, which I believe made your top 10 list this past year.
Yes, the experimental animal movie.
And so I did a little digging, and actually going back to the American film market, which we used to attend, but going back to the American film market in 2018, Neon, the distribution company, acquired all U.S. rights to the film. And Neon's a smaller distributor, but it gives me hope that it will be possible to find this film at art houses and smart houses across the country. Because I feel like Bong Joon-ho's cinematic output has been given really short shrift in this country, in that he makes movies for the big screen. Netflix released Okja, so you were shit out of luck if you wanted to see it on the big screen.
Right.
And do you remember the pissing match he got in with the Weinsteins over Snowpiercer?
Yes.
Where they released it day and date streaming with the theatrical, and they really did it as a punitive measure. I mean, utterly, I'm shocked in the wake of all the Me Too revelations that Weinstein would be punitive towards someone who doesn't, an artist, a creative person that doesn't yield to his impulses. But they wanted him to cut out a bunch of the film, remember? And he refused.
Oh, right.
And his contract did not allow them to re-edit the movie. So they said, fine, we're going to just release it streaming the same day as the theaters. And so it did very little box office because you could stay at home and watch it.
Right.
And really a disappointment because that, I mean, there's a science fiction actioner that had box office written all over it. It had major stars, Chris Evans, fresh off, Captain America and the Avengers, and an international cast, and oh my God! I mean, how was it not given, you know, a Mad Max style release.
I know, right?
So anyway, so I am looking forward to it, because although Neon is a modest distribution company, the name of the game, they understand, and this is coming through in more and more meetings that I have with distributors and content providers and content creators, is there's too much content out there. You know, not too much good content, but there is too much content.
It's content.
And so theatrical is, ironically, more important than ever before.
To make the statement.
For people to find it, for people to learn about it, for it have a chance to stand out. And yet, then, you know, how do you have theatrical make financial sense? So, again, the business really needs to change its models. But I am looking forward to the fact that there will be a chance to experience this Palme d'Or winner on the big screen, where, quite frankly, doesn't a Palme d'Or winner belong?
So, exactly.
As we enjoy the sounds of rolling thunder going past your open microphone.
Oh, my God. I had to go outside for a second. Yeah, there's a wind.
You had to go outside. We've heard everything you've been doing. You're on microphone, Dean.
Oh, my God. So what? Lilu then just has to be
I just
strapped?
Can't wait for the live 20-minute stream of your comedy show, because I'm dying to find out how many times Dean's getting outside the spaceship.
See? That's why I do it at 11 p.m. my time. I don't have to get out at that point. Whereas early in the morning, there's a live puppy Doberman destroying plants. Well, what can a guy do? You're right.
Well, that actually sounds like a fairly decent description of a movie that I've been seeing trailers for quite regularly. the forthcoming Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Oh, yes.
You seem excited. You seem excited by that. Are you excited?
I love every Godzilla movie, no matter how terrible they are. Only for the scream, because apparently sound engineers around the world have trouble replicating that. So almost every Godzilla roar is actually taken from the original 1954 and just beefed up in some way.
So
it seems that
the movie looks. I mean, it looks ridiculous. I mean, as it should, right?
As it should.
If it's taking itself seriously, dear God, we're in trouble.
Right.
But I'm actually, after the second time that I saw it, found that I'm really, really excited about it, because I think all the Godzilla work was done by motion capturing Fuzz Aldrin.
No, really?
Because Godzilla moves and behaves just like my cat.
Really? That is fantastic. See, that's this is now something animators have realized, that if you want to have your monster move realistically, go back to its evolutionary form, and you'll find some creature that is present.
Saying the Godzilla, not a mutated lizard, a mutated Egyptian Mao.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Wouldn't that be a better... Why not that as a horror movie?
All right. Mutated
radioactive cat.
I wanted to stay on the can tip, but now that we're talking about the ridiculous and the sublime, and movies, you know, not taking themselves seriously, you know what? I saw the... Well, here, a little quiz for you.
Oh, okay.
What's the all-time worldwide box office-wise, if we measure it that way?
Yeah.
Most successful superhero origin movie?
Gone with the Wind. No.
So Superman, Batman, Batman Begins, Captain America, Iron Man, on and on and on. What's the superhero origin film that has generated the most worldwide box office?
Origin film. I'm going to say it's Spider-Man, because it's been redone 8 times.
Oh, so 2002 Spider-Man is number 2. Very close. Interestingly, the film that is the correct answer ends for no apparent reason, although it is a great tip of the cap to old you know, storybook panels. It ends after the end credits with, meanwhile, in another universe. And then it shows just 6 uninterrupted minutes of the, at that time, forthcoming Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So it just ends with a 6-minute trailer. But it's Venom, starring Tom Hardy.
That's the most successful origin movie.
Yeah. Worldwide box office, almost $900 million. And I was stunned by that. Almost as stunned as I was to see that Michelle Williams is the female lead in it. I mean, there's a comic book movie starring Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams. I mean, these are real actors. And actually, when I was starting to compile and pare down and look out potentials for my best of the decade list, because we're scant 6 months away from best of the decade. I was realizing that these are two of the actors with among the most impressive filmographies of the past decade. And so it also was incredibly surprising for me to learn this, because the reviews were really bad for this movie.
Wow, were they?
And not it's one of the lowest reviewed superhero. I mean, it's almost... The reviews are almost so bad as to think it's a DC Cinematic Universe movie.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
And those films generate some big box office in terms of gross numbers, but they have lost a lot of money.
Right.
And so that's where I think the reviews have reflected the audience. They may not have resulted in impacting the box office, but they've reflected something that would slow down the box office a great degree after massive openings. But with Venom, the reviews seem not to correlate. And I'm on the side of the audiences here where I had great fun with this movie.
Really?
And I think the reviewers... panned it because of how utterly ridiculous it is.
So it crosses the line. It goes from so ridiculous to it's awesome how ridiculous it is.
Well, it's refreshing because even the Marvel movies, which have a sense of humor as opposed to the DC movies...
Right.
Still take themselves seriously. And the idea that we're taking any of these fucking movies seriously is in and of itself ridiculous. The next time, I mean, again, people sobbing in Marvel Avengers Endgame just brings to mind your desperate plea that access to mental health care be available to people. Because the next time there is something recognizably human and meaningful in a superhero movie will be the first time that there is something recognizably human and meaningful in a superhero. No, I'm bashing, but I think that Avengers Ultron was an amazing turning point in the Marvel universe. You know, this mechanism that becomes sentient and takes over, because that's the pivot point where the Marvel movies, even the ones by the Russo brothers, start to feel like sentient machines.
Oh my gosh. That robots start directing and producing.
And the exception to those are the movies where the ridiculous nature of what the Enterprise is all about is baked in. And it's what Taika Waititi does so well with Thor Ragnarok, right? And and anyway, Ruben Fleischer of Zombieland, who does Venom, embraces the ridiculousness of it. And so it's a very funny movie, and you can't take it seriously. And
now, where did you see this all of a sudden?
On Blu-ray disc.
So you saw the quality.
But, you know, I am a Tom Hardy fan. Once upon a time, friends with Tom, and he was, you know, was discussing, I was reminiscing about how back when... We were setting up what we call Illumination now as a vehicle for Patrick McGowan's comeback. Tom was talking about playing the lead in it, and
that
meant nothing to anybody at that time, because when it comes to casting, I've always been dogged by cunning foresight. Okay. but this idea of the ridiculous, you know, and the ridiculous, embracing the ridiculous as sublime, is something that the John Wick movies do extraordinarily well and have always done. And, you know, I think that John Wick Chapter 2 was a greater movie than John Wick.
Yes.
And the reviews for John Wick 3 are that it is greater still. Indeed, giving me the hope that, remember when I came out of part 2, I said, oh my God, this actually felt like For a Few Dollars More in the wake of John Wick's A Fistful of Dollars. I can't wait for John Wick 3. This could be The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Wow, wouldn't that be something?
And but the reviews are even more positive, and the box office even greater for Chapter 3, Parabellum.
Right.
And, you know, and what I love is as soon as its opening weekend last week concluded and it had knocked Avengers Endgame out of the top spot, on one social media site, the distributor sent out a message. You will serve. Which is a line in the movie, or an approximation of a line in the movie, at John Wick Chapter 4, May 21st, 2021.
No way.
And it indeed ends, just it will pick up literally, on the very last frame of 3, and 3 picks up 5 minutes after Part 2. But I want to get back to this idea of how the reviews have gotten better, the box office has gotten bigger. Indeed, the budgets have grown with that success, and the world has expanded outward. But everything that makes them, I think, great. I do think, they're great films, and it's a great franchise. I'm toying with the idea of having the trilogy on my best of the decade list.
Wow.
As one piece, because they are chapters to a story.
Yes.
But it was all in that first one that got decent reviews and modest box office. And sometimes it takes for anything new, not only audiences, but critics a while to catch up on it. They review the trappings of it. Keanu Reeves, modestly sized budget action film. Oh, I can dismiss this. And you have to pay attention to sometimes the subtext and the subversiveness and the semiotics of the action. You've got to really take it in and realize, no, they're up to some really special things in this movie. And so now we're on Chapter 3, and it's acceptable for all critics to give it a rave review.
No. Oh, I see.
And
that everybody had to get into the contextual idea of what is the meaning.
I would like to say that Part 3 is even better than Part 2. I would like to say that it is a greater film than Part 2, that it is that The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's hard for me to say it. I've only seen it once, though.
Right.
I will say that for the first time, franchise fatigue set in. And I came out happy that there will be a part 4, but not necessarily bring it soon.
Thrilled.
Yeah, you know, not bring it soon. Whereas after part 2, I wanted to go right in and see part 3. You know, again, it opens, as I said, 5 minutes after part 2, John Wick running away with his dog after being excommunicado, given 1 hour to find safe passage. And he runs almost immediately into Times Square, stops, weighs his options, looks around, and as he's weighing his options and looking around on the jumbo screen behind him in Times Square, weighing his options and looking around, is the great stone face, Buster Keaton. So just like part 2, here's the nod of the cap again, that we are in Buster Keaton films. We owe as much to this as we do to any other. And true enough, what I love is, it, you know, with the exception of, I think, one bullet, it is a half hour before John Wick kills anyone with a gun. One bullet, and it takes forever for him to be able to get that bullet, use that bullet. It's a wonderful sequence of suspense and tension building that up. But that doesn't mean he doesn't kill people. Oh, no, not when there are library books handy. Really, one of the greatest fight scenes ever, where he is completely overmatched, except he has a library book. Literacy is fundamental, and in the New York City Public Library, and it is so fantastic. It's so just devilish and delightful, and ridiculous and sublime. And he runs into a stable near Central Park, and what is his weapon of choice? The horses. At that point, and then his getaway is on horseback, and suddenly my feelings of Keanu Reeves as the modern Clint Eastwood really comes utterly to embodiment.
Wow! Full circle.
So these are the Dollars trilogy, and of course, there's references to other works and other franchises. The Matrix franchises, for crying out loud, because Lawrence Fishburne is a co-star, and unlike the last one, where he seemed to be just acting holiday to collect a ridiculous paycheck, he's doubling down on this franchise now, and he's going for it.
Now I'm dying to see this. This sounds awesome.
It's really nice, and you know, we're nice being a weird word for me to use, but it's but it's a new franchise, and it's a franchise that, in an odd way, for how ridiculous it is, and for how violent it is, and it actually is one of those franchises that reminds you that there was a time that movies mattered. Even popcorn, popular culture, movies mattered. And that there could be a time when they matter again. One of the things, and that's what I want to move into. But I will say, how about this, Dean? And that there are no rules, God damn it. There aren't any rules. There's imagination. Right. There's creativity. There's fun. There's exploration. And there's smarts, and if you do all those things on a smart budget level, you can build something. And I'm watching this movie where the only performer under 50 in it is Asia Kate Dillon, who is a transgendered performer, identifies as non-binary and chooses the singular they as a pronoun. I, as you know, embrace anybody embracing any lifestyle that means something to them. As someone for whom grammar still matters, I've got a whole world of issues with where we're at with pronouns, especially when the correct phrase describing their performance, Asia Kate Dillon, was they was perhaps miscast.
I see.
But the point that I want to get to is the only performer under 50, the only young performer. This is Keanu Reeves. I mentioned Lawrence Fishburne, Lance Riddick from The Wire, who's been in all three of the films, Ian McShane, who's been in all three of the films, Angelica Houston, Halle Berry, Mark Dacascos. I could go on and on. They're all performers over 50, many of them over 70. And here's the number one film at the box office, a movie where I, at 50, am far and away the oldest person in the audience seeing it.
Look at that.
But yes, there is a possibility that movies could matter again. And as I was watching, we haven't talked about this film, but as I was watching, I've been thinking about it a lot because it's out in theaters. But one of the real highly acclaimed movies from Cannes last year, which became a box office sensation $40 million in advance ticket sales, I think, when it opened in China in December.
Okay.
Is the Chinese film Long Day's Journey Into Night. A noirish, romantic, time travel mystery piece. And spoiler alert, you know, is a leading front runner for best film of the decade for me.
What?
And but I was realizing how many of the films, and this might be the deciding factor for me on my my best of the decade, is that all the films must be, because so many of them are, must be mysteries where, as you follow the protagonist, you realize that the point of this mystery that is unfolding is not to put the pieces of the mystery, of the solution, together, but to disassemble the parts of yourself so that you might remember something through the journey.
Wow.
And this is true of Twin Peaks The Return is very much right. about this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Blade Runner 2049 is about this.
Right.
And about these things textually and subtextually. About taking apart the pieces of yourself so that you might remember something. And there's a wonderful line in Long Day's Journey Into Night about how movies are always lies because they are created scenes strung along each other. Whereas memories are an even mixture of actual events and lies. But what about movies about memories? What are those then?
Well,
those must be dreams. They must only be understood symbolically, I guess. Which is, after all, how art is meant to be most understood.
Exactly.
And the fact that there is such an extraordinary upswelling of movies that embody this. I only mentioned, a handful, but clearly I've got enough where I could do an entire top 10 list where movies only fit this criterion. It's coming up in the zeitgeist. This need not only to remember something, but to be reminded of the power and the importance of exploring meaning symbolically.
Right. That you have to dismember to remember. Huh?
And that's exactly. what we do when we dream. So again, the power of dreams.
Look at that.
And the healing nature of revisiting memories. That you can literally time travel. You can rewrite everything. The arrow of time does go in multiple directions. If you can change your perception of what you remember, that changed perception can change everything.
Wow. That's good. You know, I'm reminded back in Sydney, Australia, there was a large mural of Martin Luther King, and it says, "I have a dream." And then underneath it, or next to it, Aboriginal artwork.
Aboriginal. What was the Aboriginal artwork? It was Aboriginal artwork of Martin Luther King?
No. So there's a Martin Luther King mural done three stories high. It says, "I have a dream." And then next to it, Aboriginal artwork in their style. It says, "I am the dream." And it's the idea.
Oh, my God. This is the people you'll have heard in edit. This is not the first time that he has tried to say this. And every time he gets to what it says, something about dream, you're utterly your voice becomes dismembered. It's torn apart into pieces, into electronic sounding pieces. So let's try one third time. There is something powerful in the subconscious and in dreaming. We always want to be on the lookout for the number three in dreams because it's the possibility of mind, body, spirit integration. So one more time, mural of Martin Luther King, three stories high, nearby it.
Nearby it, there's an Aboriginal artwork.
Okay.
And the quote.
And the quote on the Aboriginal artwork is,
I am the dreaming.
I am the dreaming.
Right? It's the embodiment of the reality of dream that I am the dreaming. That you don't have a dream, you are the dream.
This, I can't stress enough to people how wonderful, how beautiful this long day's journey into night is. It's about a man who, boy, I guess what timeline do you choose as the timeline you're following? Maybe a man towards middle age who is reflecting a lot on what happened a day where he, when you piece it together, may have been responsible for the death of a close friend, and how in the wake, because he forgot something. And in the day, in the wake of being responsible for the death of that friend because he may have forgotten something, he tracks down the lover of that friend, who is also the lover of the villain responsible for that friend's death, and never knows her real name and never knows her age, but they embark on a romance that suddenly ends. And years later, he's trying to track her down to find out what happened. But he was drawn to her in the first place because she reminded him of the mother that left him for no reason many, many years earlier.
Wow.
And it culminates in a scene where he follows a gangster. It culminates, God, I don't know where it culminates.
Spoiler alert.
About 80 minutes into the movie, he goes to take in a movie and sits down, puts on the 3D glasses, at which point the audience watching this movie gets to put on their 3D glasses to see what he sees. And what he sees is the opening credit sequence for the movie that we've been watching for 80 minutes.
Wow.
And then a single uninterrupted shot in 3D leads him through a cityscape unlike any you've ever seen before.
That sounds fantastic. Now, where in God's name did you see this that you got glasses?
Oh, I've seen
and
it. Well, I've seen it. It premiered at Cannes a year ago, but it is available everywhere now through Kino Lorber. Look at kinolorber.com, kinolorber.com. That's the website of the distributor, and they have all the play dates that are coming up through the summer. It's continuing to add more dates all the time. But this is a movie that you have to be prepared. You're gonna see it more than once.
No,
and that's the way that it is, and that's the way people are anyway with movies that they love. They see them more than once. So how about a film that actually requires that you see it more than once, and that no matter how many times you see it, it's going to continue to unfold and reveal itself to you, and in the process, reveal yourself to you.
Say. I want to see one of those movies.
I want to make one of those movies. I mean, this is one of those movies that I love it so much when I come out that I'm angry. I am angry. Fuck them. Exactly. And, it'll be really interesting when you see it to see what your response to it is, because I was shocked. For example, Lily Holloman, not a huge fan of it. And I was shocked because she's such a huge fan of David Lynch. And I said, what is this if not a far more controlled and conscious expression of what Lynch is going after without the problematic proclivities towards exploitation and finding people's infirmities funny?
Right. Well, that's a good question.
And because of those differences, I think it's something that you might you know, really appreciate.
Well, now I can't wait to see it. I'm going to go. I'm working right now. I'm looking through the white pages of Michigan movie theaters.
And to button this all up, we're over a few minutes, but to button this all up, you know, remember I said that John Wick is one of those franchises that show that movies could matter again because, Dean, the John Wick movies fit that criterion I defined.
Oh.
These are about a man exploring mysterious worlds, not ultimately to put a solution together, but to rip himself apart so that he can continue to remember something. It is even asked of him at one point in this movie, you know, because the audience is probably asking that question earlier, which is, you know, why is he, you know, he's fighting so hard against overwhelming, impossible odds. And the truth is, he's going to die someday.
Right.
So why not, instead of enduring all of this horrible stuff, why not just pick the way he wants to die? And
great question.
The reason is because he wants to be able to remember for as long as he can.
Ah, that's a good one.
The fight to be allowed to remember.
That's awesome.
All right. That brings us to the end of this particular installment that we like to consider a product of British Psychological Warfare Division specifications.
Yes.
It's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. We have more and more shows each and every week available at our rebuilding website, our Ultronic website, chillpackhollywood.com, C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, Hollywood.com. Of course, every episode at Blog Talk Radio. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. And
Instagram and Twitter. We're there, too.
We're at
Dean and Phil.
Dean and Phil. We love to hear from you. Write us, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. We got a crackerjack of a message from Bob Petrulis we'll share next week. If you want to write us, please do. We might read it on the show, especially if it's of interest to us and we have something to add. That's one of the things we mean when we say it's your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Until now, from high atop Forest J. Ackerman Square, I'm Phil Lernis.
I'm Dean Haglund. We'll see you then.
Bye, Lilu.
There, she said bye.
Promotional consideration paid for by Empire State Gas. From farm to pump, we've got great gas. Belated spoiler alert.